Okay, let's start the meeting with a, and we do have people here, so we're going to start with a Pledge of Allegiance, as we have before.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Can we have a roll call, please?
Chairman Beasley?
Here.
Vice Chairman Latchford?
Here.
Commissioner Kill?
Here.
Commissioner Newell?
Here.
Commissioner Salverson?
Here.
Okay, we have a quorum and everybody is here. I don't have any blue cards. We'll proceed forward. Last time I skipped you, Mayor, for a liaison comments. Do you have anything for us today?
You know, today was the state of the town. It was my first state of the town, and from all indications, it seems to have gone relatively well. There was an exceptional amount of effort that went in and for preparing for today, and it was well attended, and I appreciated the good support. So related, or not so necessarily related to that, our previous council meeting, things became a bit of a blur. We did make a decision regarding the golf courses. The decision was to retain 36 holes. There was more to the motion than that. I couldn't give you the details of the motion at the moment, but that was the decision that was made. And so we're moving forward and making that, I hope, a successful venture. We have a council meeting tomorrow evening, and other than that, Chairman Beasley, I don't know that I have anything else to report.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Let's go through our regular agenda unless somebody wants to rearrange it for some reason. Okay. Review and the approval of the minutes, which were distributed. Anyone have any?
Chairman Beasley, I do have one comment on the minutes, if we can just go to that for a second. On the regular session, section number two, which is there, talks about the discussion that went on between staff and the commission regarding sales tax revenue recognition. And I seem to recall from last month that that is coming about from the audit work that was done in the field and is going to generate a couple of prior period adjustments to our financial statements. And I'm wondering, I think maybe, Kevin, we should reflect that in the minutes so that that's made known. Right now, it just says we talked about sales tax revenue. And so I would ask for a change to that effect. And I can either read you what I propose or I'll let you write it.
If you want to go ahead and read what you propose, we'll get those changes made.
So I would change that section to read, discussion ensued between the commission and staff regarding prior period adjustments being proposed within the audit for fiscal year 18-19 regarding the past practice of recording June sales tax revenue in the month of July of the following year. And I think that that would capture what we discussed.
Thank you.
Didn't we also have a discussion over a
another adjustment
over another 16? Adjustment going back to 16?
Yes, I've seen there was, Kevin. I think it was a write-off on an inventory.
Chairman Beasley and Vice Chair, yes, there is an additional prior period adjustment for approximately $120,000 in the community center fund. And we can reflect that we had that discussion also. So we'll amend the minutes for that.
So we might want to just include that subject matter that was discussed.
Okay.
Other than that, I would be willing to, with that amendment, be willing to support approval of the minutes.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Thank you. Give us a financial update.
Yes, Chairman Beasley, Wendy Gomez is going to go ahead and do the financial update through August 2019 for you tonight.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Commission members. I'm pleased to report that things continue to look positive for the town and all of our funds at this point in the fiscal year. Our revenues are trending either at or over budget, and our expenditures are trending at or under budget. Jumping right into the general fund. In the general fund, total revenues collected this year through August total $6.3 million. That's compared to $5.9 million for last fiscal year. We're about 17% through the fiscal year, so we're trending right in line with where we would expect those to be. Expenditures through August total $6.4 million compared to $5.5 million the previous fiscal year. Through the month of August, our total expenditures exceed total revenues by about $130,000, and that's typical at this point. Our summer months are usually lower in terms of our revenue collections, and our expenditures tend to be a little higher at this point. The main reason being is because we always do our transfer to our debt service fund to make our debt service payments. Those are due in July. And so we always do 100% of that budgeted transfer. And so that's already been posted. As well, another thing that's impacting this fiscal year is we've already made our $500,000 lump sum contribution to PSPRS towards our unfunded liability. So that is already in our actuals as well. A few highlights in the general fund. Our local sales taxes are trending to end the year on budget. Those are currently at about $3 million or 15.6%. Our license and permit revenues are actually trending over budget at almost $500,000 or about 25% of the budget. We budgeted 300 single-family residential permits this fiscal year, and we're already at 54 through August. We also had, on the commercial side, an unbudgeted project. That was the expansion of Lehman Academy. That project was not budgeted this year, and that's gone forward and continued now, and that's under construction. So that's contributed to our commercial building permit revenues. So as a result of both the residential and commercial activity, we are expecting to come in over budget in that category by about $200,000, or just over 10%. Our state shared revenues are trending right on budget at about $2 million through August. Our charges for services revenues total just over $500,000, and those are currently trending a little high early in the fiscal year, which is typical. That's mostly due to summer recreation programs that kids are participating in, our aquatic revenues, and that sort of thing. And so we're still estimating those to come in on budget at year end. Our expenditures are estimated in the year under budget by about $170,000, and that's due to estimated personnel savings. Let's see. Overall, we're estimated to end the year with expenditures exceeding revenues by about $2.2 million. That would result in an ending fund balance of about $17.4 million. Just to note, that would be about 41% of our budgeted expenditures. As a reminder, our council adopted reserve policy for the general fund is 25% of expenditures. So very positive there.
So at least at this point, you're looking at somewhere between a $2 million, $2.2 million surplus for the year, rough cut?
It's actually, Chairman Beasley, it's actually a planned use of fund balance. So it's what I guess you could refer to as a deficit, but it's a planned drawdown of fund balance this fiscal year. Okay. Moving on to the highway fund, in that fund, total revenues collected this year through August are about $823,000. That's compared to $581,000 for the previous fiscal year. The total revenue budget is $3.8 million. Expenditures through August total $218,000 compared to $363,000 spent last fiscal year through August. The total expenditure budget is $4.1 million. So through the month of August, total collected revenues exceed expenditures by just over $600,000. For highway fund highlights, our HERF gas tax revenues, those are expected to come in over budget by about $200,000. And that's due to a one-time allocation that all cities and towns received that was approved in the final state budget. Our total revenues are estimated to end the year over budget by about $227,000. Expenditures are currently still estimated to end on budget at this time. Overall, our expenditures are expected to exceed revenues by about $110,000, and that would result in a year-end fund balance of about $760,000. Moving on to the Community Center Fund, things looking positive there as well. Our total revenues collected this year through August are just under $1 million. That's compared to $870,000 that we collected last year through this month. Total revenue budget this fiscal year is $6.7 million. Expenditures through August are roughly flat to last fiscal year at about $1.1 million. And that total of budget for expenditures is $6.5 million. So through the month of August, total expenditures within the fund exceed revenues by roughly $175,000. And just for to note and context, that figure, that difference was about $250,000 last year through August. So seeing some improvement there in the fund. Overall, total revenues at year-end in the Community Center Fund are estimated to come in just over budget by about $50,000. That's due primarily to our contracted revenues for golf and food and beverage. Total expenditures are estimated to end the year about on budget, just under, by about $6,000. In total, revenues in the fund are projected to exceed expenditures by $355,000. And we're estimating our year-end fund balance at just over $850,000.
Sales tax revenues in there?
Yes, Chair, Chairman Beasley, yes, that's correct. And with that, we'd be happy to answer any further questions.
How much is the sales tax revenue expected to be this year?
This year we are expecting, pull that up real quick. We're looking at just under $2.5 million, Chair Beasley, for the fiscal year.
Can that sales tax revenue be used for anything other than the community center? If we happen to come in much better and there's a surplus?
Commissioner Solverson, I believe per the ordinance, it is dedicated to the operations of the community center within the community center fund.
Okay. But it can be used for capital improvements and such?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, I did also want to make another note. I'm sorry I didn't bring this up earlier. Commissioner Kill, in our last meeting, you did have some questions about our permitting trends, and so I did want to speak to those for just a moment. You had asked about the current fiscal year compared to 18-19, and then the year before that. Just to look at some trends. So as I had mentioned, for fiscal year 19-20, we are at 54 single-family residential permits through August. Last fiscal year through August, in fiscal year 18-19, we had a total of 70 single-family residential permits that were issued. So there's a little bit of a dip there. Although when you look at our revenues from a dollar standpoint, they're actually higher through August by about $100,000. And so that's most likely due to building valuations, which would impact those revenues also, the revenues that we're collecting per permit. And then the commercial building permits are higher as well. Just as I mentioned, that unbudgeted project that we had in there, and our grading permits are up. The revenues are up year over year as well. In comparison to 17-18, because you had also asked about the year before that, we had issued 58 single-family residential permits that fiscal year through August. So kind of a lull and then a...
Did the rate for the permits go up, or is the valuation of the properties just higher than they were in previous years? Is the average price going up?
Chair Kill, the average price is likely going up. The fee amounts did not change, but the amount we collect is dependent on the building valuation.
So the higher the value of the property, the more the town collects in permit fees?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Looking at attachment C2, it appears that compared to historical last year, our revenue from golf seems to be much higher than last year. Can you confirm that?
Sure. Give me just a minute. You wanted to look at where we were this fiscal year compared to last fiscal year?
That's correct, yes.
I do have that, but I also have a lot of paper in front of me, so give me just a minute here. Okay, so fiscal year 18-19. Yes, I have that in front of me, the revenues. So in the current fiscal year, they are just over $1 million, about $964,000, and last fiscal year we were at about $870,000 collected through August. Mm-hmm. Some of the main differences, let me look here, town operating revenues are actually a bit higher. Some of that may be a timing issue with our member dues that we're collecting for fitness memberships. That number is higher, but we are still expecting to end the year on budget in that category. That could be a potential timing issue with recognizing those dues. The sales taxes are higher. Let's see, we're at about $371,000 in the current fiscal year through August, compared to about $356,000 last fiscal year. And then our contracted operating revenues are up a bit as well. And it looks like, just from glancing, those are up in most categories. Our member dues, primarily on the golf side, and our food and beverage is up as well.
Okay. Finally, I know that our full numbers on the contracted revenues are up, even compared with we had tennis revenues coming in here the first couple months of last year.
That's correct.
Where do we find the rental payments in the documents that you have back to the town for tennis? Where are those represented in one of the on C1 or C2 or?
Sure, Commissioner Newell, you will see those in our facility rental income revenues under town operating revenues. That's where those are falling. And so you'll see we've collected about $9,900.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You mentioned that there's a timing difference could be causing that volatility. Is that saying that you're on a cash basis or an accrual basis for that operation?
I know, Chair Kale, it's really just a result of our new software that we've brought on board, our recreation software, and in terms of when we're billing for those. It's not going to change in terms of how much revenue we post or collect for the fiscal year or changing the basis at all. It's just when those revenues are flowing into the fund and,
right.
and posting
when,
in the fund.
When you recognize the revenues in the income statement versus when you receive the cash, which one do you which one increases the revenue, the cash received or the billing?
It would be the billing, Chair or Commissioner Kale.
So then why would there be a timing difference when regarding the cash collected? Or am I misunderstanding what you said?
I believe last fiscal year they were posting at a little bit of a delayed.
Posting what?
The member dues were posting at a delayed.
So they're delayed in the billing of the dues or delayed in the collection of the dues?
Delayed just when they were posting, because previously they were done outside of our software system, and then those figures were provided to us and then posted at that point. And so in terms of when they were recognized in our financial system, there may have been a little bit of a lag until the end of the fiscal year. And so this fiscal year with our new software, those are posting earlier. They're posting as the billing is happening, to my understanding.
But if they're not posted, do you still go back and book a journal entry accruing them in the previous period?
We do.
Then why would there be a timing difference? If you're going to bill a particular month out with X number of dollars, and that whole amount that you're billing is going to go into the month it should be billed, and that same amount should go in every month, why would there be a timing difference?
Commissioner Kiel, the billing was done outside of our system last fiscal year and then posted after the fact. And so sometimes, depending on when we received those amounts from the contractor, those may have fallen into the previous month until we came to the end of the fiscal year and then reconciled and accrued and made sure we had all those 12 months in our system. Now they're just happening sooner to where they're it's almost more automatic, if you will, posting quicker in our financial system.
Okay. And so if you receive this from the outside billing, let's say in late July, and it was for June, you booked that into June, correct?
Yes, that's correct. That's correct. So none of that changes. It's just when they're flowing into our financial system right now. They're posting sooner, and so that's the reason for the difference. At the end of the fiscal year, it'll all be 12 months, same period as their billed. It's just at this point in the fiscal year.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we're learning how the pace of the organization runs itself during the year, at least I am, and it's interesting. It seems like during the summer, which are the first few months, typically are slower, and then it sort of gears up as it gets in past the summer, which I guess you could expect. I don't know whether that's seasonality or weather, but at this point, it doesn't appear to be out of character to still be forecasting a large deficit for the end of the year from what I've seen in past financial statements. But just to make sure, is there anything on the horizon that you see that we need to be concerned about? Anything that's giving you pause, or do you feel confident that we'll probably reduce that forecasted deficit down to a real small deficit by the end of the year? It's a leading question, by the way. I want to make sure you understand.
Vice Chair Latchford, I mean, I know it is early in the fiscal year still, but I see no cause for concern in any of those areas. We budget very conservatively each year, and our track record has been to consistently outperform compared to budget. So if anything, I would expect that deficit to go down.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. That gives me great comfort.
And Vice Chair, again, the budget anticipated that we would spend down fund balance by $2 million mm-hmm. in this fiscal year. So council adopted a budget spending down our available fund balance. So we anticipate that expenditures will exceed revenues for this fiscal year.
I got that. I mean, budget-wise, I'm kind of looking at actually what are our expectations. We always have expectations. And So I'm just sitting here. I just want to make sure that I'm not missing something. So I feel confident based on the way the performance of the organization has been in past years that we'll probably see a coming down of that deficit, I'm guessing, unless something has come up. But I agree with you. We did budget for that. So I'm just trying to get that extra level of comfort.
What assumptions were made in the fiscal year budget relating to the golf course? When the budget was put together originally back in April, May, whenever it was finalized, June, what assumption as far as losses were concerned were included in the budget?
Commissioner Kiel, we, in terms of the number of holes of golf and the contractor, that was status quo in terms of what we budgeted for the fiscal year. Are you talking overall fund performance or looking at just the contracted?
Well, let me add a different way. Would if you know then when you put the budget together what you know today as far as leaving the golf course open, will that change your budget assumptions at all?
Commissioner Kiel, what that could change is probably factoring in, for example, the change in day play that we've implemented. Those figures that we are expecting to collect from additional day play on the member course, those would be factored into the fund as well. And then the decision with the push golf course, that fiscal impact will be implemented in the fund as well. So those are the two changes that I'm.
I think we budgeted right like 1.8 million and of a deficit. That's just forgive me if I'm wrong. And the fund actually performed better. Golf performed better than budget, just because we had a better than expected last 2 or 3 months of the year while we were finalizing the budget. Mm-hmm. So I would think that if current trends continue, we would be considerably under what was budgeted for that loss due to the policy decisions made.
Mm-hmm. So the assumption in the budget was that all 45 holes would remain open for the full year?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there any other questions on the financial report? If not, could we move to item 3?
Okay. Chairman Beasley, item number 3 is review and discussion of town council adopted motion from the October 2nd council meeting. So within your packet tonight, we did include the unofficial transcript of the motion. So you have that there with the conditions. And so if there's any questions on that, staff would be prepared to answer that. There was also a few follow-up items from the last meeting. At the September 17th meeting, one of the commissioners asked for a more optimistic revenue projection on the 18 and 36 holes. So that additional spreadsheet was included in your packet. Staff wasn't planning on going through the details of that since the council gave us direction to move forward with the 36 holes. But if you do have any questions on that, we'd be prepared to answer that. There was also an additional question. A member inquired if bonding to build the community center was an option. And again, that is part of the motion that council adopted. So one of the items that they directed staff to do was to bring back options and recommendations to finance necessary capital improvements for the golf course and community center. So staff is currently working on those options and the recommendation. So we're planning on taking that back to council in the first meeting of November. And then the third item was there was a question on whether country club memberships were taxable or not. We did do some research on that, and they are not a taxable transaction. So any fees paid for country club memberships do not have an additional sales tax on top of that. So with that, staff is prepared to answer any questions you may have if you want to go over details of the cash flow statements or the motion that was approved by council.
The country club membership that you just referred to, is that something that includes kind of unlimited golf? Or is that just a membership to belong? It doesn't include any golf?
Chairman Beasley and Commissioner Kill, the whatever fee is paid for that country club membership does not include a sales tax. So that country club membership, I believe, includes, I'm not sure if it's an unlimited number of rounds of golf or a certain number of rounds, but whatever is included in there is not a taxable transaction for the town.
Okay, so they're basically not charging sales tax on rounds of golf if you're a member of the country club.
Correct.
And if you are not a member of the country club and you are playing golf, is there sales tax on that?
Commissioner Keel, yes. There, if you go in and are a day play player and go in and pay your, on average, $37, you would pay us an amusement sales tax on that. But the Model City Tax Code that all of Arizona and all towns in Arizona follow does not have a provision for taxing country club memberships. So there's not even an option for the town to tax country club memberships.
I understand what you're saying. It just seems a little unfair that if you're a day player, you're going to pay sales tax, but if you're a country club member, you don't pay any sales tax whatsoever. So it sounds like the town is missing sales tax there somewhere.
Commissioner Kill, again, there is a Model City Tax Code that allows us to have an option to charge sales tax on amusements, which does include the golf course fees, but it does not have a provision to allow to charge a sales tax on country club memberships or memberships to any type of private club.
So not having a provision, does that mean it's illegal or it's just not done or what?
We would not be able to change our code to have a sales tax on country club memberships.
Okay, thank you.
Kevin, thank you for providing the pro forma, the optimistic pro forma. And I happen to notice that you performed a 10-year forecast here. And based on your assumptions, you get the forecast down to the fact that on a 36-hole option now, that the projected sales tax support would only be required of $263,000. I ran that up against the variation B with contribution that I believe that council made a decision on. I believe that's the one they were basing their decision on. And I see that in 10 years, that forecasted support will be required of $470,000. Which is not very different from your optimistic. So it leads one to believe that, what is the difference? I mean, you're being very optimistic and coming in at $270,000. The council's using a forecast that's coming in at $470,000. So $200,000 in 10 years is not that big of a variance. So are you using primarily the same assumptions? Was there anything there that caused that to come out so close?
Vice Chair, the biggest difference is the original cash flow that was done had golf revenue increasing at 2% a year in the out years. We adjusted that up to 5%. So that is one change that was made to be a little bit more optimistic on our growth rates, going from 2% to 5%. But then we also changed the beginning number in year one for some additional revenue, as Wendy mentioned earlier, that we're seeing in this fiscal year. So we projected some of that growth in year one and then grew it at a higher rate, being 5% versus the 2%. And so the combination of that is what is resulting by year 10 of, under the optimistic projections, of an additional $200,000 less in subsidy.
All right. So, just to catch up with the town, then the council, make sure we're all at the same place. Then, the decision on the 36-hole golf was made based upon the variation B, and so that has a projection that in 10 years, the taxable sales taxable support that will be needed is $470,000. So that seems like that tracks pretty close to your most optimistic projection. But that's what the decision was made on.
Are you concerned that the optimistic projection is optimistic enough, or that the baseline is too optimistic?
Well, I'm concerned because we asked Kevin to go back and perform an analysis based upon what would be his most optimistic.
So you wanted like a most optimistic.
Well, his most optimistic came in okay. only $200,000 difference. So I'm a little concerned that there's no need to be concerned. The decision's been made, but I do want to emphasize that staff has given us a most optimistic picture that we asked for, and it's coming in a pretty close to what the decision the town based its forecast on.
And Vice Chair, just let me check a number here. Yes. So one of the other considerations is that in this is by year 10, we're hitting 50,000 plus rounds of golf. And so there's a point out here in the out years where we can't continue to grow at the 5% as we're getting towards the maximum number of rounds available. So that is also what's causing the difference between the subsidy to not be as great, because we are hitting, I believe in year 7, where we'd be maxing out the number of rounds played that would be available, and then from there the revenue growth is just increases in the average round per.
That becomes a little more variable
So and again, we didn't want to come back with, you know, this is an optimistic one. I didn't want to come back with something that was just completely out of line and unreachable. But this is, you know, kind of the far edge of our optimistic projections.
So you're being conservatively optimistic.
Correct.
That's right. Okay. So now in both of these projections, I didn't look, but I know in your optimistic one, you don't include any service for the potential of capital improvements. That's all pay as you go in these analysis.
Vice Chair, you're correct that there's no capital analysis in this. This was looking at just the operating. Really didn't, in our analysis, determine whether it was pay-as-you-go or bond financing, but it was just simply we were looking at the operating side here so we could compare apples to apples.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I really appreciate that insight. Mm-hmm.
Do we want to discuss it all? Is it appropriate for us to discuss? I know you haven't presented the report yet based on capital moving forward. Would a discussion from us to throw out other ideas you might want to consider be appropriate at this time?
Chairman Beasley and Commissioner Newell, staff is currently working on those options and recommendations, so we're not prepared to present any of that information or the different options. But if the commission has some options that they want to throw out there, I would definitely be willing and open to hearing those.
Anyone else, or do you just want me to keep rambling? Okay, I can
ramble.
I had two ideas of things you might want to consider. One would be if to consider with the PAYGO option completely, to have some sort of emergency contingent plan that if there was a catastrophic failure of one of the irrigation systems, that could be done with an emergency clause for a bonding authority. As if there was a large rupture that was going to take the course offline for a month or two, we would want to get that started, you know, immediately, and would need we should treat that just like we would any other emergency. So I would think the council would want some options to prepare for that if they were going to go PAYGO. The other option I would think would be possible would, if you're presenting options, would be to when looking at one of the at the courses, to split the irrigation costs along with as a separate thing to accomplish as the wiping out of the deferred maintenance bunkers, tee boxes, flattening, and other things. So you might want to have, rather than fix the course, but you've got fix the irrigation of the course and then fix the rest of the course as well. Might be things that you would increment as steps to consider.
So just so I'm clear on that, so break out the irrigation improvements versus the other improvements.
That's correct. It's things you could do on a step basis. But again, for my first thing is that I think if we are going to go, if PAYGO is going to be considered as the only way to do the golf course improvements, I would think the council would want some sort of emergency net in case there is a catastrophic failure and they need to do something with an emergency clause to bond. Okay. To bond that.
Thank you.
That's all.
I'm going to take advantage of this time to read some of my comments and suggestions, which leads to a couple of motions related to this issue. So please bear with me. The Town Council and Finance Commission have convened many meetings for months involved what to do about golf courses owned by the Town of Oral Valley. We've heard from town residents living around the golf holes and others not near the courses. We've had presentations from golfers and non-golfers. Information was presented about property value concerns and data presented by various sources looking at alternative uses for golf courses. We've seen multiple economic forecasts and projections related to the courses prepared by the Town of Oral Valley, Troon, a contracted consultant, and even a preliminary set of projections by the Commission. Importantly, we also have audited history of the losses associated with the golf program since the Town of Oral Valley acquired the golf courses. Golf appears to be taking a disproportionate amount of the Town of Oral Valley resources, benefiting a limited number of town citizens and others who are not residents but utilize the golf courses. There's a lot of emotion related to the discussion of golf. What is clear is that golf and other recreation facilities are expensive for the Town of Oral Valley, but represent a valuable amenity to the residents of the Town of Oral Valley. Going forward, the town has many rising demands on financial resources, including an extremely large and increasing unfunded pension liability for employees, rising salary and benefit costs for employees, including police officers, requirements for expenditures to maintain Town of Oral Valley assets, and the continuing need to modernize Town of Oral Valley facilities and provide additional services for citizens, all 44,000 plus. The Town of Oral Valley is nearing build-out and new income sources are limited. The growth of revenues is projected to slow significantly, and that will force difficult decisions on allocating resources. The Town of Oral Valley Council has decided to maintain a 36-hole golf program that requires contributions from homeowner associations around the courses, totaling $125,000 per annum. And fees are being increased on golf members by 10% on or before January 2021. Current projections by Troon and the Town of Oral Valley for a 36-hole golf program have cut costs to the point that nearly every expenditure is fixed in order to minimize losses, and the forecasts create targets that establish maximum subsidies by the Town of Oral Valley to be funded by sales taxes. The Town of Oral Valley Council resolution approving 36 holes of golf establishes annual financial targets based on Town of Oral Valley and Troon forecasts, but no accountability, penalties, or contingencies are created if the forecasted targets are not met. I do not disagree with the Town of Oral Valley Council decision on proceeding with 36 holes of golf, but the consequences of the golf program not meeting the projections are that we're likely to be back in the same situation as we have been in for the last many months slash years. Because of the future uncertainty of revenues, and I really question some of these forecasts, and history showing very large losses subsidized with sales taxes, combined with other major Town of Oro Valley financial requirements, I make the following motions. One, the Finance Commission recommends to the Town of Oro Valley Council that if the financial targets as forecasted by the Town of Oro Valley for a 36-hole golf program as identified in the approved council motion dated October 2nd, 2019, are not met in the next three fiscal years, then the Town of Oro Valley will require the contributing homeowner associations and golf members to make up the excess losses, capping the Town of Oro Valley subsidy at $750,000 per annum. In addition, all capital expenditures for golf should be on a pay-as-you-go basis with no borrowing allowed. Two, the Finance Commission recommends to the Town of Oro Valley Council that if the homeowner associations and golf members cannot or will not make up the losses as described in number one, then the Town of Oro Valley discontinue the 18-hole Kanata course, operating only the 18-hole Conquistador course, and return non-owned holes to the homeowners and repurpose the remaining holes. Maximum Town of Oro Valley funding going forward for the 18-hole golf program should be capped at $500,000 per annum using the existing supplemental sales tax. Three, the Finance Commission recommends that the Town of Oro Valley Council redirect funds from the 0.5% sales tax currently in place to support golf and recreation so that money in excess of $750,000 per annum be placed in the general fund and be utilized for reducing the unfunded liabilities in the Town of Oro Valley pension plans. With that, I'm going to recess this meeting for 15 minutes while I distribute this to the rest of the commissioners so that they have an opportunity of taking a look at it so they can participate in the discussion that we need to hold on this. Thank you. Okay, I think we're live, so why don't we reconvene the meeting? I think everyone's had a chance to take a look at. I've been reminded that what we can do this evening, we have some water, is discuss the various elements of the motions and put those items onto the next agenda for something that we in fact could vote on and move up to town council if that's what the Finance Commission decides to do.
Correct.
So what I have attempted to do this evening is generate what I think are some serious discussion points, because being an old corporate finance guy, if you're going to set some targets and you're going to make business decisions based on those targets, then I think there needs to be some kind of consequences, some way of measuring and then doing or correcting as you go along. And the way I view the council-approved motion is that there are a lot of things there, including targets, but I don't see anything that says what happens if those targets aren't met. So that was a primary driving force to my comments this evening. What I would prefer not to have happen, speaking as both an individual and a member of the Finance Commission. I would prefer not to see 2, 3, 4 years from now the same thing happen that we've just been going through for the last 6 months or a year, which I have quite frankly found to be a bit divisive within the town. It's created an awful lot of time, a lot of anguish on everybody's part. Worry, angst about what's going on with the golf courses. Let's try to get this kind of thing pinned down to something that's rational and reasonable. So with those comments, I open up these motions for discussion. I'd like to have input. Chuck?
In principle, I agree with everything you're saying here, and I was I had a couple questions on it. One was when you mentioned the pay-as-you-go basis, I'm assuming you're referring to just the golf operations.
Correct, yeah. I'm and maybe that needs to be clarified in a motion that we can act on. I think we need to carve out the community center as a physical plant.
Yeah.
From the golf courses themselves. And where I have difficulty with the golf courses is, and I'm going to call it prematurely, spending too much money on irrigation system replacement.
Right.
And maybe reconfiguration of golf courses, not knowing whether we actually can meet these financial targets, number one. Two, again, speaking as an old corporate finance guy, I hate spending a ton of money without getting a payback. And dumping a boatload of cash into an irrigation system that, by Troon's estimate, is going to save us maybe 15% on the amount of water that we throw on that course, doesn't begin to even pay for the debt service. So that would be the last thing I would spend money on. I'd rather keep repairing the pipes. But
until you find out if it's really going to... Right.
I wouldn't just throw cash at it real quick.
A couple more comments. I come from a very similar background, corporate finance. I was a CFO for many years and for public and non-public companies. And if I ever had somebody present me something like this with no accountability whatsoever, I think the board would just throw it out and say, laugh at me and say, well, where's the accountability? And what happens if you don't make the numbers? I'm not sure in your motion one. I would probably do 2 years rather than three, because I think, you know, by 3 years you're going to get back to the same old where you're at today. And I think we need to know, understand that 2 years from now. I think either last or the previous meeting from that, we made a motion that we asked the town administration or finance department to let us know how much they're willing to fund the golf operations. Did we ever hear back from them?
We have forecasts that were generated.
We made a motion that we wanted the town council to come back to us and tell us how much they are willing to spend to subsidize the operation of the golf course. Did we ever hear back from that?
Well, I think that's the 750.
750, which
okay.
Is...
And that's where...
I wasn't sure that was...
Right.
Okay, I wasn't sure that's what that was an answer to.
Yeah, no, that comes off of the... it's in here someplace, but it's part of that October.
Just a point of clarity here, and help me, Mary and Kevin. The next 3 years, I think the way the council put their proposal on is that we could actually subsidize higher than 750. The 750 has to be attained at the end of 3 years. Is that? Did I interpret that right? Or
Chairman Beasley and Vice Chair, as I recall, yes, the Year one, I think we were in the $800,000 range, but by year two on variation B, we met the $750,000 subsidy amount.
That's from the variation B.
Yes.
I think you're right. I'm showing 814 for first year of 2021. So, but the determination of whether you've made or not made isn't going to occur until the end of 3 years. Is that right? Or am I misinterpreting that?
As far as what the council motion was? Well, the council motion just referred back to the cash flow statement variation B, and that those would be the targets for us then.
So they didn't set any steps in place to say, well, if we're through the first 2 years and we're not going to make 750, then there's no further determination until the end of year three. At some point, somebody's going to have to account for this, and I'm kind of looking at you. So I'm just wondering, how are you going to account for this? How are you going to make a determination to present to the council that you have or have not made your objectives? Is that still to be discussed? Or?
Vice Chair, it was not included in the motion how that would happen, but I would anticipate, in 2 years when we get to the end of 2020-21, and we have our actual numbers, then we'll compare the actual results to what was on that cash flow statement in variation B, and then compare how we did versus what we had projected. And then that, I assume, would be presented to council at some point.
Okay. All right. So it's probably still to be determined, I guess, is the best way to say it at this point. Okay, thank you.
excuse me. A couple things. I'm going to jump around between a couple of these motions. We'll start with motion two. I really don't know if this would be necessary or prudent or from our commission. You know, one of the things we can't do in future councils, you know, a council can't do is bind a future council to action. So even if we had a long discussion about what the proper terms were or, you know, how the exit would go in 2 years as some of us transition on and off, we would be a new commission with new members who'd have their own opinion, who would start over. So I just think saying at some point we have to realize that trying to dictate what's going to happen in the future, that would be on an ordinance or a resolution, really is, since it's not binding, it's probably not the best use of our time. Or to go back to something that you mentioned, is that this entire process has been an investment of not just the town's resources, but also the town's time. And as we go through, you know, we have 12 meetings a year. Our council has 24 meetings a year. You start looking at the investment of staff resources and the ability of the town to discuss what we want to do. And it really, when you get down to it, every week that we're focused on golf is a week we can't be focused on pensions or other things, because there's just the body can only focus on certain things that's in front of it all the time. And you're absolutely right. If we're here back in 2 or 3 years with another 8-month process, then we've wasted 8 months of our town's ability to focus. So in that way, I think that I don't think talking about how we're going to make up losses in the future really is a good use of our time. They're going to decide that after 2 years if those goals are met and what they want to do. If
the only reason that's in, Dave, is to say we need to create a consequence.
Sure, and I think that those things were, I think those were mentions. And
here's the potential consequence.
I think everyone kind of knows what the potential consequences are. This is not going to be a free lunch moving forward forever. I think when the motion was originally made by the mayor, it was 36 holes if these goals are attained. focusing on Conquistador as a permanent Gulf piece, and then Kenyatta if the numbers work out. So I think that's been pretty clear, and I don't know if we need to go on more and
we are a body that can recommend to the council.
The other problem I have with motion two is when we talk about the maximum funding going forward for the 18 holes golf being capped at 500,000 is we have no data that says that's what it was going to be. And it certainly doesn't relate the information that we learned going through this process of what the fixed costs were of closing a course, whether it was loss of revenue to the water board, whether it was loss of tax revenue, whether it was repurposing costs, is that I would hope that one of the things we can do going through this process, as we seem to be at the close end of it, is kind of put to rest that all we need to do is to cut losses more is to close a golf course when we know that there are costs involved. And these are expensive costs. And that it's not a free system to close 18 holes and the numbers magically look better. And depending on what you felt was a benefit to the community and a revenue source, it's actually more expensive to have 18 holes than 36 holes in some of the projections we looked at. So I would definitely think that that's a piece of motion too that I'm not comfortable with, because we know better at this point than to say that 18 holes is certainly cheaper than 36. We know that, and we've talked about it here, and we've looked over the numbers. And one of the best things we can do for the community moving forward is to continuously remind them that 18 holes is not, closing golf holes is not a solution to. There's not a surety that it's going to save us money. There are costs, and we can educate people on what the costs are, but we shouldn't be holding out everything gets better if we close 18 holes.
I think you have a greater degree of confidence than we have on 36 hole projections, and that's why that's in here.
Sure.
It's a challenge to redirect some efforts looking at alternatives if the 36 hole numbers don't materialize.
And I'm fine with a future council and a future budget commission looking forward at that and saying, hey, we're not meeting our goals. Why aren't we meeting our goals? What are we going to do to change not meeting our goals? It's just that we've also had a process here where we've identified what the costs are of moving to 18 holes, and that's not reflected here. And I think it gives the impression to the body of people in the town who don't spend as much time as we have going over this that there are costs as well and negatives to the bottom line of moving to an 18-hole facility. I'll go to motion three. I like motion three. This is what we've talked about, when I made my proposal.
That's your motion.
That's five months ago. And I think that there's a definite feel, and I approve the idea that this is something that the town needs to understand, is that there is a large, as we'll talk about more later in this meeting, that is a much larger problem to the town than motion three. But this is also a living organism that works in both ways. And my original proposal to cap those losses, or to cap those excess, to take those excess revenues in the community center fund and direct them into the pension fund to make up for that, was combined with using bonding money to handle the renovations on the community center and the golf course in order to realize those savings quicker. In other words, we know that the system, as the golf course, is losing money at an unacceptable rate as it was configured and directed to before, 5 weeks ago. And my proposal focused on bonding, changing the things that we knew were going to continue to lose money, the restaurant, the water, and fully realizing the revenue increases off that. And then in the future, taking the money off the excess revenue and directing it to the pensions. If you combine motion three with motion one, what you've really done is, and I am fine with doing a pay-go as well. I think PAYGO for golf operations makes a lot of sense. I think that the numbers are perfectly in tune with what the pace of improvements can be made based on the projections and offer a good feedback value for us to decide whether or not future investment is worth it. But if you cap the amount of money available for PAYGO improvements at $750,000, what I'm afraid is you'll strangle the ability for the course to and the courses to improve enough on the revenue side due to improved conditions by the decrease in deferred maintenance, and you're basically strangling it. So this is more of an either or. Yes, I like using excess revenues in the fund to go after our pension deficits, but I can't do that if you're strangling and increasing the losses by holding off the improvements that are one of the things that are going to make the losses shrink. So it's kind of a, you can have one, you can have the other, you can't have both, in my opinion. So that's just where I'm at.
Kevin, where is the town in terms of looking at financing options? And what timing are you looking at to, say, bring some discussion items for review?
Chairman Beasley, staff is currently, staff is currently working on the...
It's the Kit Kat bar.
It's that and the soda. And probably the tar smell. So staff is currently working on financing options and recommendations per the council motion on October 2nd. And we are intending to bring that back to council at the first meeting in November. Is that the 4th or this? November 6th. So we're planning on bringing that back to council on November 6th for discussion to go through the different options and staff's recommendation as far as financing the capital improvements for the golf course and the community center. Now, there may be further direction at that meeting, and council may direct staff to go back and look at something differently. I don't know that we'll have a final answer by then, but that is our plan to make our recommendation on that night.
Are you going to break up CIP programs to show different levels of financing for them, or are you going to look at big bundles or what?
Chairman Beasley, my intent is trying to keep it very high level, but we are still working on that analysis, trying to keep it at a fairly high level as far as the different options, being the pay-as-you-go, financing, inter-fund loans, or some combination thereof.
Kevin, I'm just on that point. Is there timing issues that get involved with making these kind of options? Looking at next 3 years, first of all, have you defined the options that you're going to be looking at, or have you done that yet?
I'm in the process of doing that now. Again, I don't have anything finalized that I can really discuss, but we are in the process of coming up with those options for council.
So it could be option A, option B, or a combination thereof. I'm kind of getting a sense of...
Yes, what I heard from council is they want an analysis of the pay-as-you-go option, bond financing. There was also some discussion of, intra-fund loans. So that's what I will be focusing on, or some combination of those three.
Yeah, I think from a financial standpoint that one of the reasons I was looking at the optimistics and then comparing that to the variation B is that either one of them, it doesn't matter which one you choose, you have to somehow finance it, because all I heard over and over again from our consultants, or read from the consultants and heard from the our management company, is that the investment needs to be made to make these projections come true. And I don't want to see us trying to make decisions about financing in a vacuum here. And So if I look at these motions tonight, one of the things that I'm missing here is what's happening with the capital funding. In other words, what's the cost going to be to the town to service that debt, to carry it? And at this point, I think it's part of the puzzle. If we don't know what that is, my only concern is we're making motions without having all the information in front of us to be able to know the impact. I certainly expect that if we were going to be spending, let's say I'm going to go back on memory, I think it's $3.8 million, there has to be a return. But that return, you know, oftentimes when I've gotten into these situations before, that return is factored in as a cost. You know, it's a return on capital, a return on investment. And those things we sort of don't see here. So I'm a little hesitant to jump into the motions without seeing that information in front of me. I think I'm sort of varying.
Yeah.
If we don't do the capital work, can we continue to increase the revenues by that 5%, or is that just not even a possibility? And I feel like I've heard the answer in previous meetings saying we've got to keep this up to keep the course in tip-top shape, to attract the potential golfers, to attract new golfers. So I'm a little concerned, well, if you don't do that and then you put the targets in, are you not going to meet the targets because of that, right? But I don't know if you put the $3.8 million in, and then in 3 years, is it going to be, well, we just invested all this money, we can't, you know, if the numbers don't come to fruition, is that the conversation that's going to be had at that point?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Salverson, I think that there are certainly there's some potential flexibility. I think if you read my most recent memo to the council, one of the things that I caution is hard and fast, you know, criteria on, you know, if A doesn't happen, then B will happen, because I think that there is some concern, I certainly on my part and certainly in the projections, that, you know, just like in any business, uncertainty has impacts. And uncertainty can potentially inhibit our ability to recruit new members and, you know, those types of things. Now, does that mean that there can't be some methodical investment process? No, that doesn't mean that at all. I think that it does. You know, one of the things that we'll be including in our financial analysis is, you know, the pro formas, as an example, were based upon a 15% reduction in water. So when we adjust, say pay as you go, that sort of thing, we'll be adjusting those projections as well. Because obviously if the investments aren't made for that water reduction, then that ends up being an expense increase, or rather a sustainment, you know, of an expense increase that was not included in our projections. It was based on assumptions that were very clearly outlined in the documents that have been presented over the past 5 months or so. So those are all of those little details that we're looking at, so that we can make sure that the council has that next set of information, so that they can make a wise decision that's based on a successful implementation of the continuation of 36 holes. And again, that's not one way or another. That's a set. We've been given the policy direction on the part of council. There are a lot of moving parts that we are putting together in terms of decision points and that sort of thing, things that impact how an RFP is developed, you know, a number of things that sort of have to happen at certain steps in order for us to, or let's say best case scenario for those things. And that's what we're putting together. So we now have had just under 2 weeks with this information, and it's just going to take us a little bit longer to make sure that we've, you know, tried to capture each one of these issues.
Okay, so in addition to the financing of the capital, maybe a plan that, you know, some options of ways that the capital expenditure profile could be implemented would be another thing to look at. Sounds like maybe you're looking at that.
I would say yes.
Yes, okay. And I agree. I mean, nothing would make me more happy than all of the, you know, best-case scenario numbers happen. That would be wonderful. This would all be for nothing, for naught. But I think that to be prudent, we should put in some trigger points. And we should put in some, you know, what are the achievable targets that are the expectations? And if they don't happen, kind of what are the consequences? I think if you don't put that in, everybody goes to sleep and then time passes and then you're right back to where you started. So
I doubt anybody will be sleeping on this one. I'm just going to say that.
One of the things that we've looked at, or a couple of things we've looked at as far as options are concerned, are keeping all the courses open, all 36, 45 holes, closing some of them, and making them into desert landscaping and reformatting it and putting in landscape irrigation. I don't remember anybody ever discussing any other options other than those two. Have any other options been discussed by the town council or administration?
Is this the similar question to your conversation last time about the potential of selling property?
That's one option, yeah. To a developer.
Right. Those have not been things that I have heard from council members that there's any interest in. That, you know, with all due respect, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Kill, we've been given the policy direction on the part of council. So we're moving forward with a plan to keep the 36. And we're, you know, as I mentioned at the last council meeting, or maybe two council meetings ago, continuing conversations with HSL about the Push Ridge course. So that's the direction that we're headed in, and that's where our staff resources will be directed.
Oh, I understand that. But I heard sort of off the cuff that was never discussed at council chambers or at a council meeting, and I'm just wondering, what's the downside to that alternative? Seems like that would be, there wouldn't be any cost involved. The council, the town would be able to take in money. The maintenance of the facilities would be paid for by the new developers, HOA. So I'm just very curious on what the downside would be to that, other than closing it. I understand that it would be best to leave it open. But other than closing it and turning it into desert landscaping, what's the downside of having it sold to developers?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Kill, while this topic hasn't been publicly discussed on the part of the council, I think it would be fair to say that there is some concerns about any type of development that goes on next to residential areas that have been there for 30 or 40 years, that those impacts are notable. And if you're familiar, as an example, with the Vistoso golf course having closed, there was an initial proposal at one point for redevelopment that the neighbors around the golf course were not very fond of. There's a lot of political capital that's necessary in order to go through a variety of things, from rezoning. There's a state law that says any piece of property that is valued more than $1.5 million requires a vote of the public in order to sell it. So there are a lot of hurdles to move forward with this. And as I mentioned at your last meeting, there was a concept that was identified by the consultant that did reflect in their options 18 holes, 36 holes, and 27 holes, areas that could potentially be developed. And so they were portions of areas. They were not entire courses. And so the council did have an opportunity to discuss those, and there was no direction to move. There was no direction to staff that was any type of a preferred option.
So the council had no interest in selling to developers. They think that homeowners who live on the course definitely would prefer to have a open desert landscaping than have a half-acre or acre home behind them.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Kill, I'm not in a position to speak for the council since that topic was not discussed. I'm sharing with you general concerns that I have heard raised in a variety of different conversations regarding that type of an option.
Okay, thank you.
Does anybody have any other comments on these motions? I guess otherwise what we'll do is put that on the agenda for our next meeting. So I would hope everyone will take a look at these things and pull out their Sharpie or pencil or whatever it is. Let's see what we can give to the council and then move forward. John?
I'd just like to also ask if we can get the product of your work, Kevin, regarding the financing. I think that's important to be able to understand what the council's going to be evaluating. They're going to have to obviously take that into context with the motion that they've already passed. And so to have that information and be able to integrate it with anything that's coming out of this commission would be, I think, quite useful.
Yeah, great point. Okay. Kevin, can we have a quick little conversation on the pension situation?
Absolutely. So item number 4 is review and discussion of the Town of Oro Valley Police Department Public Safety Personnel Retirement System Valuation Report for June 30th, 2018. So at our last meeting, the commission asked that we bring forward the 2019 report. That typically isn't available to the town until mid-December, so we will be able to present that to the commission probably at the January meeting. So since we didn't have the 19, I did give you a copy of the 18 report. I do understand that you've already gone through that in detail. I know one of the questions was what was the rate of return? And Commissioner Newell pointed out to me just before this meeting that PSPRS had just posted a notice on their website, and their rate of return for 2019 is 5.5%. Now, typically they budget a 7.4%, so they're actually coming in at a deficit of what they had budgeted for their investment returns. So I would anticipate when we get a copy of the 2019 report, you're going to see that it is a positive 5.5% investment return, but it is coming in short of what they had projected and budgeted.
So the impact there, Kevin, is that based on what you're saying, is that the unfunded liability amount will probably most likely increase, and it could be fairly substantial.
Vice Chair, you're absolutely correct. It will increase. I don't know how substantial it will be, but what they do with these investment returns is they smooth them over 7 years. So whatever they're short of their budget, they don't take that impact in year one. They take 1/7 of that and then smooth that over a 7-year period.
If I remember correctly, I think last year's report showed it was about an $800,000 increase in unfunded pension liability for every 0.1% below the target. So it's substantial.
Was that comment, was that figure for us, or was that figure for?
Just us.
It was just us. Okay.
Just us. Yeah. One of the things that we had, Kevin, was that discussion we had a joint meeting to include the town council, the trustees, et cetera, for the police fund. I think it would be really useful, even though we have a different set of circumstances and we don't have the funding flexibility that we would have for the non-police employees. But for us to get a better understanding of that fund would also be very helpful, because it also has a large unfunded pension liability. And I guess the assumption that we'll ultimately have to make is that there'll be catch-up on that one, too, but directed probably to all participants as opposed to the flexibility that we have on the police fund.
Yes, Chairman Beasley. So the difference with the non-police retirement system that we have, which is the Arizona State Retirement System, it's not an agent plan. So all entities in Arizona are pooled together, and we don't get a separate report just for our town of Oro Valley employees. And so it is different from the PSPRS plan, where it breaks out our unfunded liability separately. But we could definitely get you the ASRS actuarial report also.
Is there any possibility of getting the people here that are involved in managing the money so that we have a better understanding of the asset allocation strategy and the returns that are ultimately coming from that?
Chairman, are you speaking for the PSPRS or the ASRS or both?
Ultimately, both.
Ultimately, both. We're not
going to try to direct them as to how they're managing money, but trying to get an understanding as to what's going on, I think, is important to understand what this funding deficit is and where it's likely to go.
Right. My understanding was that somebody from PSPRS did come out to a previous meeting and did that for that system. We can follow up with the Arizona State Retirement System and see. I don't know if they'll have that same flexibility, since we don't have a specific plan for the town, but we can definitely follow up with them and see if somebody would be available to give a presentation.
Based on the nodding heads here, I think that would be helpful for us.
Okay. We'll definitely follow up with them.
Who was here last time? About three meetings ago, there was a gentleman here that was explaining all the pension things. Where was he from?
PSPRS.
That was the police. Yes.
Okay.
Any other discussion on what's happening with the audit?
Okay, so item number 5 is discussion of the timeline and schedule for the fiscal year 2019 audit. So at the September 17th meeting, the commission did request that we add this agenda item and give you an update. So the audit field work has been completed by the auditors. That was done last month. They've completed all of their field work. They're in the process of compiling the town's comprehensive annual financial report. Those are our financial statements. Staff right now is working on the transmittal letter and the statistical section. So when you do a comprehensive annual financial report, there's an entire statistical section that has up to 10 years worth of history on different trends. And so staff is working on that. The auditors, I spoke with them. They believe that they'll have a draft of the CAFRD completed by late November, early December. So we asked if they would be able to come back for the December 17th meeting to make a presentation on the audit. So if they're done with the audit, at least a week before that, we will present it to you on December 17th, or have the auditors present it to you on December 17th. If it's not done, then we would have to bring it back to the January meeting. But we're shooting for that December 17th meeting to bring the audit forward to the commission.
I, for one, would like to have more information on this 2016 backdated
yes.
number. And it's not so much the magnitude, the number, which I think you said was $120,000. It's just that, why did it take so long?
I guess I would like to know when it was first identified.
Yeah.
That's what I'd like to know, is when was it first identified and why wasn't it, if there was a lag in reporting it.
Why wasn't it caught and why wasn't it?
Well, less of why wasn't it caught, but when was it caught and was there a lag between when it was caught and when it was reported?
Yeah. Well, there was obviously a lag. The question is how long of a lag. One of the things I seem to recall from my previous member of this committee back in 2008-09, we used to get updates from the auditors on how things were going. We didn't have to wait till the end when the audit report was completed. Also, I was on the Finance and Audit Committee of the school board, TUSD, and we used to get updates from them also. Is there any way we can get updates and not have to wait till everything's final before we talk to them?
Chairman Beasley and Commissioner Kill, absolutely. We could have the auditors come back and give an update after they do their test of controls. Then they come back later and do their substantive test work. So if that's the direction from the commission, we could have the auditors come back on a more frequent basis and not just at the end when the financial statements are completed.
I remember on the, I don't know about this one, but I don't know the TUSD school board. We had a member of the commission actually attending all the audit meetings, so they keep abreast of what everything going on in those meetings and not have to wait till the end. Is that doable?
Chairman and Commissioner Kill, I would have some concerns, I guess, on that, and would have to discuss that internally with staff. And the town manager to see if that is the direction that we want the Finance and Budget Commission to fulfill a role like that.
What would be the downside of keeping the commission up to date and abreast of all the issues going on?
I would just have to look at the bylaws. I'm not clear if the bylaws of the Finance and Budget Commission are to act as an audit committee. So I'm not familiar with the bylaws, and I would need to go back and do some research and again speak with the town manager on that.
Okay, thank you.
Well, let me just follow up for a second on what you're saying, Chuck. I do know that good governance practices do reflect that there should be somebody within the organization here outside of the finance area who has a direct relationship with the audit team to provide for the auditors to have an opportunity to speak to someone without having to go through those that might be impacted the most. I don't know if that exists here. Does it? Is there?
It's just like being a member of an audit. There's an audit committee and a board of directors that has access to the auditors at any point in time outside of the finance committee or the finance department.
Right. Exactly. I mean, it's just a good governance practice that many, I believe, in public, I think it's required, and everything. So I'm just, but I gather that's not in place right at the moment. If the auditors came up with a concern and they needed to talk to somebody outside of the finance area, there's no designation at the moment.
Vice Chair, they would always have the option to go to the council, the mayor and council, if there was anything that they felt that staff was giving them inappropriate direction or if there was something that they felt that they needed to go directly to council. But we can look at best practices and see, where I've been, we've never had an audit committee, but we can look to see if there's some best practices and maybe see if there's a council member that would be part of an audit committee or whether it would be a separate audit committee.
Yeah, typically this person who's so designated is outside of management, with all due respect to Mary. I'm sure she would be appropriate, but generally I know in my organization it was designated somebody on the board, and I was not in the loop as CEO. So something I think we should discuss with the audit team and with yourselves and give some thought. I think that's a good point.
Well, that's why the school board decided to do it back about 3 or 4 years ago, because they wanted to make sure that there was somebody from the outside of the finance department in communication with the audit team at all points in time, all the way along the process.
Are you aware of any other municipalities in Arizona that have a finance commission and what their relationship is with
our? Chairman Beasley, I have not worked any place that had an audit committee. I have heard that there are some towns or cities that do have an audit committee, so we can definitely follow up on that and see what how their structure is, whether it's a council liaison that would do that or whether it's some type of a commission. But there are definitely some municipalities in Arizona that do have an audit committee, and we can follow up with them and see what the best practice is.
Is it 'cause, you know, we do operate at the direction of the council and of the town manager on all of these issues, so we want to be helpful, not away. Anything else on this topic? Okay. Future agenda items. We've got the follow up for those golf motions. We've got some follow up, probably much further down the road, on pension plans. Maybe audit, but
one suggestion.
Yep, fire away.
First of all, let me just start off by saying, Kevin, you're doing a fantastic job of filling in here. I hope Mary's happy with you and everything.
I might be.
Okay, you can see she's smiling. We got candy out of it, so
yeah.
I appreciate all the work you're putting into this, and everything is in the interim. So. Maybe it's a future agenda item, and maybe it'll just come from appearance, but how are we doing on searching for a permanent placement? So it may not be necessary today, but it'd be nice to have that, I think, for the future, maybe next agenda item. But thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah. And Chairman Beasley, staff did have one item that we wanted to bring forward. It's the discussion of a permanent base adjustment. So in Arizona, there's an expenditure limitation for cities and towns, and we've been under the home rule option, which basically means whatever the town adopts as its budget is our expenditure limitation. But that has to be approved by the voters every 4 years. Another option besides the home rule option is a permanent base adjustment. So that's where you would go back to the 1982-83 budget year that the state uses as their beginning point, and you would adjust that beginning budget number and adjust it for inflation and population growth, and then that gets you a new expenditure limitation that you have to live within. So historically, the town has been under the home rule option, and we would like to come back and discuss the, you know, the benefits of a permanent base adjustment. One of the benefits is that you don't have to go back to the voters every 4 years. You do it one time, you adjust that base, and as long as you go back and adjust that base at a sufficient amount, that should carry you through in the future, so you don't need to go back. The home rule option, you do have to get that approved every 4 years from the voters.
Has it ever not been approved?
We're not at liberty to discuss it tonight. Okay. So what we'll do is we'll write up some information, and per the enabling resolution by council, then as the town manager, I'll provide a tasking to the Budget and Finance Commission, and we'll be prepared then to review it at your next meeting.
Err on the side of detail. We need education.
We will. I promise we'll go through a very detailed presentation at that time.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? Do I hear a motion to adjourn? This is probably one of the earliest we've had in a
while. So moved.
Second?
Second.
Approved? Okay.